Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this February 22nd, 2022. My name is Frank Hornstein. I'm the chair, and we will start by taking the roll of members. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason. Representative Mason just joined the Zoom call. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson.
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West. Representative West.
West, present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from our last meeting, which was on February 17th. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the minutes were done as well as usual. And so I will move to approve those minutes.
All right, members, thank you. There is a motion to approve the minutes from Representative Petersburg. Is there discussion? Seeing none, we can do this as a voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All of those opposed, the motion prevails. The minutes are approved. So members, on this snowy Tuesday, we have four bills to consider. And our first bill, and so the process here will be, roll calls automatically on all of them, even if we find them not controversial. So our first bill on the agenda is House File 2993 from Representative Baker, and I will move that House File 2993 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Baker, it's always great to see you. I know you have a lot of transportation interests. I've always enjoyed the several times I've gone out to your area on transportation-related business, and welcome to the committee, and proceed with your bill introduction and testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. A quick update, Mr. Chairman. Highway 23 is being worked on. The trees are getting removed. We're getting those gaps taken care of, and again, with all of our work in the past, it's nice to see that finally coming to fruition. So, members, I am really honored today to be with a couple of very good friends that came to my wife and I with similar circumstances when most of you know that I lost a son, Dan, about 10 years ago now. Brian and Kristen Schlegel lost a beautiful boy similar to ours, but also in a probably more tragic way that's dealing with what's called this fentanyl issue that we've talked about too. I'm honored today to present House File 2993 in honor of their son. And I have with me at my home with my wife and I, the parents, and Kristen will be speaking on behalf of this, Mr. Chair. So I'd like to bring her in for her testimony, if I may.
Okay, thank you, Representative Baker and Ms. Schlegel. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Kristen Schlegel from Candiohi County. Good afternoon, members. Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here to talk about John. John was 24 when we found him on the morning of November 4th, 2017, cold in his bed. It was our worst nightmare realized.
He had accidentally overdosed from fentanyl. It snowed the day before we found him, shutting down the harvest that he was helping with on that family farm. He told his dad to drive carefully on the way home. He and I made a HelloFresh meal for dinner that night, and then we all watched Gold Rush together on the couch. We went to bed first, and he carried our new puppy in so she could say goodnight, and then he told us that he loved us. That was the last time we saw him alive. He died in the night, just feet from our room with the puppy by his side. Sorry. From the time John could walk, he wanted to serve his country. He played with his army guys, lining them up just so on the living room floor, watching hours of the History Channel and dreaming of achieving his goal. He joined the army in 2013. He went to boot camp at Fort Benning, Georgia, and was stationed at Fort Wainwright in Fairbanks, Alaska. John's MOS was infantry. He was assigned to a striker team where he quickly excelled and became the vehicle commander, even though it was above his rank. John loved the military, his brothers in arms, and wanted very much to be deployed overseas. Unfortunately, John Ryan was injured in an Army hockey game, and that dream would never be realized. John served his last year of duty in chronic pain after sustaining a terrible groin injury. He was honorably discharged, even bringing home an award for meritorious achievement, but he also brought home an addiction to opioids. We found out after he died, while going through his medical records, that he was given several opioid prescriptions during the last year of his service. John was let down by the Army in several ways concerning the injury, and later he became very disappointed when it took a year to get into the VA. But he never gave up his love for the military. He only wanted to be treated at the VA, and he only wanted to be treated by people who had served. He was prepared to go back in the military if we could get him back in good health. A complicated surgery at the University of Minnesota helped tremendously with his pain, but the addiction raged. We didn't know anything about opioid addiction then. We sure do now. We've been very open and transparent about John's struggle, sharing whenever we can and trying to educate people on the dangers of opioids and the fentanyl that killed our son. After his death, we worked side by side with the district attorney to bring the man who sold the drugs to justice and hopefully to save his life. We expected John to take over the farm one day when he had given his time to his military dream. He was our only son, and our dream of continuing the family farm ended with him. I can't begin to describe the heartbreak of losing a child. I know Representative Baker shares that knowledge with us, and I hope and pray that the rest of you do not, for it is the worst possible pain and devastation imaginable. We hope to honor John's life by continuing to fight this war against opioids, and our wish would be that every time someone drives down Highway 71 and sees John's name, that they will remember his kind heart and how he cared about others. We hope they remember how funny he was, his smile, and most of all, to remember what happened to him and to be safe. Many of John's army buddies came to the funeral from all over the country, and several more wrote to us, telling us story after story of how John singled them out, drew them in, listened to them, helped them, and let them know that they weren't alone. We're proud of him. We hope that you will consider honoring him in this way so his legacy lives on. Again, thank you, Mr. Chair, and we hope that you will support HF 2993, remembering our beautiful boy.
Thank you so much, Ms. Schlegel, for this just very, very moving and powerful and loving story. And you have a real partner in your state representative.
Yes, Steve's been amazing.
You know, has been a real champion on this issue
for
many, many years.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate him. I appreciate you and your husband and what you're bringing to us. And we hope that passage of this bill will, as you said, remind people of his beautiful life. Members, I wanted to see if there were any questions or comments or statements. We'll start with Representative Mason and then Representative Cagle. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Chair. and to the testifiers, I can't begin to express my sympathy for you. I mean, I have three children, so I mean, I just know how difficult it is. And my question is, into the bill, I will definitely support the bill and what you're trying to do here. My question is, was your son getting the help that he needed with the medication as things were going along? And you did mention it took a year to get into the VA.
He was not getting help. We tried everything we could think of. Like I said, it did take a year to get him into the VA. They saw that he had been prescribed depression medication and said just to continue with that, and they'd see him back in a year. We had a lot of, you know, at the time, the VA was so busy that they had to, I can't think of the word but right now, but he had to go to appointments all over the state. You know, the psych eval was in Edina, the physical was in Marshall. It took forever. And then the post office returned his packet because it didn't have our PO box listed in our town of 200. There was a trainer there that day who wouldn't allow it. And then they disallowed him. We had to start over again because he didn't respond. They lost a packet altogether. It was lost in our post office for a year. It just was a very long road for John. And we didn't know about Suboxone and some of the other things that we do now that possibly could have helped him then. But no, he didn't get the help that he needed.
Okay. Thank you for your response. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mason, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this isn't really the committee that we tend to air some of this stuff in, but, you know, I've gone through that battle with a family member as well, and I don't know why my brother survived and recovered and thrived, and why your son didn't. And every time I hear a story like that, I thank God every day that my brother is still with us and continuing in his journey of recovery. And not only that, but he's helping other people in their recovery. Mm-hmm. So makes me that's super wonderful. Proud.
Maybe that's why he survived, was to help all those other people.
Well, and then, you know, just thinking about how many years ago I sat in the emergency room with him, you know, not knowing if he was going to live or die.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, you know, I serve with Representative Baker on the Opioid Epidemic Response Advisory Council, and joke with him that we're becoming a power couple here. but I just really wanted to thank you. And, you know, I hope that more families end up with stories like mine.
So. I do too. Thank you.
Okay, let's see, members. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I wanted to also share my sympathies and condolences for your son's loss. I have a son-in-law that's also has been in the military and is trying to get a disability from the injury, and there is a lot of runaround. And I wish that's something that the state had more control over rather than the federal government, because it does seem like it's something that needs to be addressed. And so thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for your strength, and my blessings to you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, members, don't see any other hands up. And before I give the last word to Representative Baker, Ms. Schlegel, I know it's so difficult to share these stories, and you did it with such grace and such dignity, and you are an amazing mother and spokesperson for this cause. And I think I speak on behalf of the entire committee in expressing our heartfelt and deep condolences, and appreciate your courage in sharing your story. And I hope that the Memorial Highway will honor deservedly honor your son. Representative Baker, do you have any final comments before we vote?
Again, Mr. Chair, Madam Members, this was a picture of John. I never had the opportunity to meet John, but what a good looking young man he was. And again, I'm very, very proud of what Kristen and Brian brought today to our home. And again, thank you for allowing us the time today to spend talking about an issue that, you're right, Representative Cagle, we don't get a chance to talk about this much in other committees outside of our stuff that we do. And we just appreciate your support in this, Mr. Chairman and members, and look forward to remembering John, Ryan, and others that are in that situation in different ways that we all do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, again, I just appreciate your support moving forward.
Okay, thank you, members. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2993 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll on the bill.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
No.
Barr, nay. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Olson, aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Richardson, aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 16 ayes and one nay.
Thank you very much. The bill will move on now to Ways and Means. Appreciate your work on this, Representative Baker, and I think we're going to see you again soon with some of your other legislation in this committee.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker. So with that, members, we're going to move on now to House File 2966 from Representative Kosnick. And we are kind of continuing on with our theme of honoring those who have given their service to our country. Representative Kosnick, you're welcome to your committee, at least the virtual testifiers desk. And I believe you have a motion for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Calling in my committee is a little assumptuous, but I like the sound of it nonetheless.
You're a member of it. You know, everyone on this committee should consider it their committee.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, I would move. Actually, I'm not sure where we're moving this file to.
It's actually, I think you have an amendment, but whether the amendment goes on or off, I think it goes to the Veterans Committee. I don't know the formal name of it. What is the formal name of that committee?
Mr. Chair, it's the Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee.
Okay. That's where your bill is going, Representative Kosnick. That's the motion.
Rather than trying to remember that, that is my motion. Mr. It was veterans and labor and some other stuff.
Yeah. Proceed with your testimony. Do you have an amendment, Representative Kosnick?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the H-2966-A1 amendment. It is an amendment to put the bill in similar language to the Senate companion.
Okay, members, do you want to maybe just briefly explain? Well, actually, if it's similar to the Senate companion, you'll explain it. So once we adopt the amendment. So is there any discussion to the author's amendment? We can take a voice vote on this, members. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails, and the bill, House File 2966 as amended, is before us. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Under current law, former service members must have at least 181 consecutive days on active duty orders to be able to obtain a veteran's designation on state-issued licenses or identification cards. House File 2966 modifies eligibility and document requirements for this well-earned designation and distinction of veteran on the license or ID. It allows National Guard or Armed Forces Reserves to obtain the designation if they have met the reserve requirement, which includes 20 years of qualified service and still requires an honorable discharge or general discharge under honorable conditions. I'm proud to say that this bill request came to me not from a paid lobbyist or an organization, but from a newer Lakeville resident who contacted me this summer and who we will hear from shortly. Major Vicki Schwartz served our country for over 26 years in the U.S. Army Reserves, but does not have discharge papers that meet the current requirements of 181 consecutive days of active duty. I believe she has 119 days, but as I said, she's served for over 26 years. For Major Schwartz and several Minnesotan veterans like her, there is no doubt that they have served our country with honor, and we should be privileged to provide a small recognition of adding the veteran's designation on the license or ID or the plates if they request. So thank you for your consideration of this bill to honor more of our National Guard and Reserve members with this veteran's designation. And Mr. Chair, Major Vicki Schwartz is available for a short testimony of why this is important and also to answer some questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Let's proceed with the testimony. Major Schwartz, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Vicki Schwartz. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for this opportunity to testify. As previously stated, I am a retired major from the United States Army Reserves. I served 26 and a half years from June 1974 through January 2001, exclusively in the Army Reserves. When I relocated to Lakeville, I felt it was time to update my license and to get the veteran designation that so many of my friends had gotten. I was disappointed to discover that the state of Minnesota narrowly defined what a veteran was. Simply, you had to have DD 214 with 181 days of consecutive active duty. It did not matter that I had a United States Department of Defense military ID that allows me to get into any active duty base in the United States. I had a VA veterans identification card. I had Department of Army retirement orders. I had a DD 214 with 119 consecutive days of active duty. I had my ARPC form 249-2-E, which is the chronological statement of retirement points. And I had a letter from the Dakota County VA office stating I was entitled to veteran status per federal rules. I also have the following veteran benefits available to me. I earn a monthly retirement stipend. I have TRICARE for life, which is medical coverage. I will be able to be buried at Fort Snelling National Cemetery. I have post-exchange or PX privileges. I have rural welfare and recreation privileges that allow me to use military resorts around the world. After serving all those years, to include being a company commander and a team leader for a training battalion, I found myself unable to get that destination on my card. After a considerable amount of phone calls and help from Representative Kosnick, I was able to get the female veterans license plate with these documents. Yet the licensing agency did not have the flexibility in order to issue me that simple card. So I'm guessing many of you may be wondering why I would go through so much effort for something that perhaps seems insignificant. But from my perspective, I'm a proud American, a proud Minnesotan, and a proud veteran. My family, friends, and I sacrificed a lot during those 26 and a half years in order to serve my country the way they needed me. So today I'm here to respectfully request that the veteran definition and documentation be amended to make it possible so veterans such as myself are able to get the designation on license cards and license plates that we have earned. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Major Schwartz. Thank you for your service to our country and to our state. And for sharing your story. It's very compelling. And I know that there's many more out there that have the same concerns and frustrations you do. So you're a very good spokesperson for those that would like to see this bill passed. Members, are there any questions or comments? I see Representative Heinrich proceed with your question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Major Schwartz, for your testimony in our committee today, and I just thank you for your service. I was kind of in the same place for a time. I ended up doing a longer term on active duty in Iraq deployments in 2003 and 2004. But prior to that, I had been activated and attached to a group of Marines that went to Honduras, and in our total active duty time, I had signed up in the reserves originally. Our total active duty time came up to about 150 days. And so I remember there being that standard of 181 days and kind of being frustrated about that. So, you know, our military service members join our, it's a fortunate thing that we're able to kind of join in different ways. A lot of us have had, you know, commitments back home and jobs and businesses to run, but we still want to serve in the military and then rise to the call when we're called upon to go active. But they are no lesser important than people that spend four straight years on active duty or anybody over that 181 days. So thank you, Major Schwartz, for your testimony today. Thank you so much for your service. We appreciate you. And thank you, Representative Kosnick, for bringing this great bill forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Heinrich, and your service. I don't see any additional hands, so I will give the last word to Representative Kosnick.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members. Major Schwartz, thank you for bringing this bill to my attention. It's my honor to advance it and hopefully get it through passage for us. It's got good, I already had a hearing in the Senate, and it's bipartisan supported here in both bodies. And so, members, I renew my motion to send this to the Labor, Military, and Veterans Committee or the, if I messed up their title, the previous motion.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. We really appreciate you bringing this forward. And again, Major Schwartz, thank you for being here and for your testimony and your service. Members, we'll proceed to a vote on the motion as amended. That is, we're voting on House File 2966 as amended. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Hornstein votes aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Koznick?
Koznick votes aye.
Koznick, aye. Representative Mason?
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Olson, aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 17 ayes and 0 nays.
Okay, well, congratulations, Representative Koznick. Your bill is on the way to the next committee. And we're now going to proceed to House File 3219, Vice Chair Cagle's bill. And members, this is a transportation policy bill brought to us by MnDOT. And Representative Cagle, I know that you have some testifiers, and this bill and an amendment, we're going to be laying this bill over, members, for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. So, Representative Cagle, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a MnDOT technical bill. Would you like me to move the amendment?
Yes, please. And if there's anything in the amendment that you think would be important for us to know about, you can very, very briefly mention that.
So thank you. The A22, I believe, is the amendment, and it just gets the bill in the language that MnDOT would like it.
Good. I don't.
We're in the shape.
That sounds good. Is there any discussion to the A22 amendment, members? I don't see any. So we will just do a voice vote to get the bill in the shape the author would like us to consider it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All of those opposed, the motion carries. To your bill, Representative Cagle, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the MnDOT technical bill. It has to do with the North Star Bikeway. And I know that there's been some advocates who wanted some input on that. And so we're going to work with them on some language around the bikeway stuff so that when it comes back to the omnibus bill, we will have some, hopefully, you know, we'll be working on that. There's also some turnbacks in there, Indian employment preferences, municipal screening boards, definitions of drones and insurance requirements, some grant agreement requirements, EV charging infrastructure at rest areas, and some adjustments to corridor of commerce. So with that, I will leave it to my testifier. Eric Rodine from MnDOT is here to answer some questions along with some other folks on the call. We have Tim Mitchell, Ryan, Grove, Mark. If there's any questions, I'm seeing these names and can't pronounce them. So if there's any questions, we can turn to the testifiers.
That's okay, Vice Chair Cagle. we have plenty of expertise that you have assembled, a good team. But did you want Mr. Rudin to proceed here? Okay, Mr. Rudin, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I can just walk through the sections of the bill very briefly, and then as Vice Chair Cagle indicated, We do have several folks on who can help respond to questions if we need them. So thank you, first of all, Vice Chair, for carrying the bill for us. This is the agency technical bill for this session. Section one of the bill designates the North Star Bikeway, which would run from St. Paul to Canada through the Duluth area. This is already sort of unofficially designated as the North Star Bikeway. We worked with bicycle advocates, and that was the name that was selected. It is also already designated as U.S. Bicycle Route 41. So it's not really creating a new bikeway. It's just kind of memorializing this name for this particular bikeway. Section two of the bill creates a new legislative route. And this is part of a situation out on Trunk Highway 67 near Granite Falls, where a portion of that highway has actually collapsed into the Minnesota River Valley. And repairing that section of highway really is just not feasible. And so we are intending to reroute Trunk Highway 67. And creating this new legislative route 340 would be the portion of old 67 that would remain on the trunk highway system. Section three of the bill creates an Indian employment preference for projects on or near a reservation. This is something that we already do on federally funded projects. And so we would like to offer this preference on projects that are 100% state funded. The preference would be offered to individuals who live within a reasonable commuting distance of the project location. So that would be negotiated with each individual tribe on each individual project. You might remember this provision has been around for a couple of years, and we have discussed a mileage limitation, which we would be open to if the legislature so desires. Sections four and five of the bill are related to the municipal and county state aid highway systems and would allow cities and counties to collect needs on portions of roadways that are slightly outside of their jurisdictional boundaries. This is not super common, but it does happen from time to time where a county state highway might, for example, go slightly outside of the boundary of a particular county. So this change will allow them to collect money needs on those portions of roadway. Section six of the bill conforms the law to current practice. And what happened here was that back in 1989, MnDOT had two metro districts, an East Metro District and a West Metro District. And in that year, those were combined into one metro district. And so previously, the metro area had two members on this municipal state aid screening board. And that's how the screening board has continued operating over the years. But we discovered that the statute really refers to one representative from the metro district. So this just clarifies that we should have two city engineers on the screening board. Sections seven and eight relate to drone registration and insurance. You might remember we did significant work on this issue last year, and our folks, as they were implementing those changes, discovered a couple of provisions that were perhaps not as clear as they should have been. And so the changes last year related to an exemption for recreational drones, as well as the ability to provide more flexible insurance options in the drone industry. So those changes are just updating some of the changes we made last year. Sections 9 and 10. 9 is again related to the Trunk Highway 67 situation that I was describing earlier to repeal Legislative Route 274. Legislative Route 301 and Section 10 would be repealed, and that road would be turned over to the city of St. Cloud. This is near the state prison in St. Cloud. And then Section 11 repeals a section of Minnesota rules that requires monthly reporting on transit grants. And for some of the larger transit systems in greater Minnesota, these monthly reports are an administrative burden. And so we would negotiate or arrange with each transit system as to what the reporting schedule should be for grants that they receive for the transit program. So reporting will still be required, just not in each case on a monthly basis if we eliminate this requirement. So that's a brief description, Mr. Chair, of the bill, and we would be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin. I appreciate your summary. I'm going to just see if we have any hands up. Representative Petersburg, I see you have a question or comment.
Yeah, thank you. So I kind of missed it here. Where's this bill going from here, Mr. Chair?
We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation bill.
Okay. Well, it doesn't have an awful lot of it doesn't have any dollars or anything, so I suppose it could go to the floor. So I was just curious about that. Yeah. Thank you for that. The question for Mr. Rudin is, I know that the Indian employment preference has been around for a little while, and it has been kind of controversial in the past. Could you kind of clarify again exactly how we resolved some of those issues that we were concerned about in the past?
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg. I think in the past, there has been some concern expressed about how great of a distance the preference would apply to, and, you know, concern that, you know, we wouldn't necessarily want to give a preference to somebody who lives in Winona but is doing a project on the Red Lake Reservation, for example, and that is certainly not the intent. So the bill currently refers to a reasonable commuting distance. I think last year we had some conversation about, you know, putting something in the law that would maybe restrict that to a 60-mile distance, and if that is something that is desired, we could add that to the language once again to set a kind of a maximum distance limitation for when the preference might be applied.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, a follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And in regards to the current language, as it is that it's a reasonable distance, who makes that determination, Mr. Rudin?
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, that would be decided between the department and the tribe. So really each project would negotiate that with the tribe. And the reason for that is that, you know, in the Twin Cities area, for example, you know, a 20-mile distance might be reasonable. But in greater Minnesota, you know, somebody may not really think too much of driving 100 miles to work on a particular project. And so it can really vary project to project and location to location. I would add too that this really mirrors the federal provision, which does not have a specific mileage limitation, but again, sets us up to determine that on a case-by-case basis.
Representative Peters, thank you, Mr. Rudin. Representative Peters, do you have any further questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that reasonableness gives a little bit more discretion, kind of makes it a little bit more common sense, shall I say. So thank you for that clarification. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Thank you.
Good. Appreciate the discussion. Are there any further questions or comments? I don't see any. So Vice Chair Cagle, any final thoughts about House File 3219?
Mr. Chair, nope. Just want to thank you for hearing the bill and renew my motion that House File 3219 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. And the bill's laid over, members. And we have one final bill today, and that is House File 3220 from Representative Lippert. And this bill will also be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation bill. And Representative Lippert, welcome to the Transportation Committee, and look forward to hearing about House File 3220.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members of the committee. So an electric vehicle transition is underway, and to support that transition, we need electric vehicle charging infrastructure. In particular, we need electric vehicle charging infrastructure at regular, dependable intervals across the state. Electric vehicle owners and those who are considering purchasing electric vehicles need to know that charging will be available as they drive across the state. And placing electric vehicle charging infrastructure at interstate rest stops is a simple way to provide this assurance of access to charging at dependable intervals to the public. This bill creates a simple policy change. It allows for installation and fee collection for electric vehicle charging stations at interstate rest areas. And Eric Radin from MnDOT is here and can comment on this bill as well.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Mr. Radin, welcome back. And
sure.
Proceed.
Thank you. Once again, for the record, I'm Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And thank you also, Representative Lippert, for carrying this bill for us. This is an agency initiative, as Representative Lippert said, to facilitate the possible installation of electric vehicle charging stations at rest areas. Mr. Chair, we know that electric vehicles do emit far fewer emissions than a traditional internal combustion engine. And, you know, that's even including the emissions that are created from generating electricity to charge the vehicles. So we estimate about 3.74 metric tons per year are emitted by a gasoline-powered vehicle, whereas an EV vehicle would emit about one-third of a metric ton per year. It's 0.88%. I'm having a little trouble reading my numbers here, but a far less of an impact on greenhouse gas emissions. The electric vehicle registration has been increasing significantly. In 2018, we had just under 6,000 electric vehicles registered in Minnesota. In 2021, that number was over 19,000. And so there's been about a 221% increase since 2018. And so while EVs still make up a relatively small portion of the overall vehicle fleet, the number of EVs is in charging or is increasing fairly rapidly. There are over 1,200 charging points in Minnesota currently, but there are definitely some gaps in the network. And so that's what this bill is intended to help us address. Especially on some of those corridors in greater Minnesota, there are locations where we see a need for additional charging stations to be located. And so we worked with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to come up with a plan for accelerating electric vehicle adoption in Minnesota with a goal of having 20% of light duty vehicles being electric by the year 2030. We're also working with our neighboring states, especially Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin. We've got a five-state compact focused on electric vehicles and really trying to take a regional approach to providing facilities for EVs. The federal government in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act is going to be providing funds to states for EV charging stations. And currently, the interstate system in Minnesota has some alternative fuel corridors established already. Others are pending. But we have seen the federal guidance, which really has just been released in the last couple of weeks, continue to emphasize interstate corridors. So Interstate 94, Interstate 35, portions of these have already been designated as alternative fuel corridors. The remaining portions of I-35 and I-94 are pending that are not already designated. And we anticipate that Interstate 90 in southern Minnesota would be added as an alternative fuel corridor in the coming months. And so the guidance that came out on February 10th requires states to come up with a plan for spending these federal funds. We have to have this plan completed by August of this year. And again, interstate corridors are really emphasized as sort of the first location for creating this EV charging network. And so that's why we've got the bill before you today. I understand that there have been some concerns expressed about locating EV charging stations at rest areas. I would like to just mention that there is currently a federal restriction about having EV charging stations at rest areas on the interstate network. And so even if this bill passes, there still would be that federal restriction that Congress may or may not choose to remove. But of course, we have rest areas on other trunk highways located around the state. And so it very well may make sense to install EV charging stations at those rest areas. And again, if Congress takes action, then we would be prepared to potentially install charging stations at rest areas on the interstates as well. Finally, I'll just close by saying that we would envision these charging stations being owned and operated by the private sector. MnDOT does not really want to be responsible for installing or maintaining these charging stations, but rather we think that's a more appropriate private sector activity that we would partner with private companies to own and operate these charging stations. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin. Thank you for mentioning that private piece. I've gotten a number of questions about that, so thanks for anticipating that. We do have a question from Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got two or three. Well, first question is for you, Mr. Chair. Are we going to be hearing something on the entire EV rollout in a separate bill or a separate hearing sometime later?
Representative Barr, you are just you anticipated exactly what I was going to say at the end of this, but I'll say it now. Yes, we're going to spend a bit more time in committee on this. You know, there's also some proposals around electrification of transit vehicles. You know, we want to dig in a little deeper into sort of how this works in terms of the mechanics of what Mr. Rudin was talking about related to the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So this is not the only time we're going to talk about electrification, but of vehicles, both personal vehicles and transit vehicles. But it is an opportunity to ask and to discuss, and certainly have time for that today. So please feel free to ask any questions of Mr. Rudin or the author.
Okay, good. I'm going to stick to the bill first, and then if I could come back for a follow-up or two.
Absolutely.
The first question is, in the way this was presented, that we were going to be able to charge fees, and I don't see anywhere in the bill where people, it just says that they may install, operate, and maintain safely in safety rest areas, but I don't see anywhere in the bill where it says that the consumer will be paying for the electricity they're using. Is that, did I miss that someplace? I guess that would be Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Barr. So the bill language says it allows for installation and fee collection for electric vehicle. So that's the policy change in the highlighted at the bottom of the bill text, I believe.
Doesn't say fee collection. It says electric vehicle charging stations may be installed, operated, and maintained in safety rest areas. I'm missing the fee part. Am I missing? Is there an amendment I didn't see?
Either Representative Lippert or Mr. Rudin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I can try to address that. So the section of law that we're amending here is a restriction on commercial activities on the highway right-of-way. And so that's really the restriction that we're trying to address, is that, you know, I think if we installed a charging station currently and did not charge people a fee to use them, we would not actually be prohibited from doing that. But the whole concept of a commercial activity where we would be charging fees is the situation that we're trying to address. And so while the new language doesn't refer to necessarily charging a fee, that would be the intention, and that's the restriction that we're trying to to remove today, that so that we would be allowed to charge a fee for the use of these stations.
Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get that we're removing the restriction, but it doesn't say that if there will be a fee charged if they are installed. And I would like to see that some language around the fee stuff added before this hits the floor or gets included in an omnibus bill. I'd also like to make some comments that Mr. Rudin, you alluded to this at the end of your comments about you don't envision the state actually, the state doesn't want to actually run and operate an electric vehicle charging network. And what I'm seeing and some of your previous comments in your today were the federal government requires this, federal government requires that. And it looks to me like the federal government is trying to push the state of Minnesota into owning and operating a commercial vehicle, a state-owned electric vehicle charging network. And I was wondering if you could address that, how some of the federal interaction around commercial vehicle charging requirements currently, I mean, you said they just came out a couple weeks ago, so I'm not going to expect you to have everything memorized in there or anything like that, but could you address some of the, how are, with the rules from the federal government, how is the state going to be implementing a commercial or privately owned electric vehicle charging network as opposed to a state-owned network?
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Barr kind of got to this a little bit, but the my understanding of the federal funds is that it's really for states to work with private industry to, you know, incentivize, for example, if there's a place today where maybe there aren't a lot of electric vehicles registered, and so it might not make sense for the private sector to install that station today because they couldn't turn a profit at it. We would be able to access those federal funds to provide some sort of incentive for the private sector to do that. But Mr. Chair, we do have Tim Sexton, our assistant commissioner, on to do a little bit better job responding to that.
Thank you for mentioning that. And I was remiss, members. We do have a testifier from the public that wanted to testify to this bill. So maybe we could have, if Mr. Sexton has any brief comments, we can take him now. And then we also have Anna Johnson on the line who has prepared testimony. So if we could just do that now, and then if you have any additional follow-up, Representative Barr, we'll get back to you. So Mr. Sexton, and then we'll have Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. For the record, my name is Tim Sexton, and I serve as an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And to Representative Barr, your question regarding the private sector and the federal dollars, I think this is very important. And in looking at the guidance, you're right, we're still sort of dissecting it and trying to make sure we understand all the details and nuance. But what is very clear in the guidance is that these funds are really targeting private sector investment. And as Mr. Rudin mentioned, the idea is that this initial influx of federal dollars will support the private sector to build out this network. And it's important right now because in many locations throughout Minnesota, it's important to have those chargers in order for people to conveniently travel with electric vehicles, but there's not enough EVs out there to incent the private sector to do this on their own. So the intention with these federal dollars is that short-term support for the private sector to invest in EV chargers. And I just want to reiterate the fact that we at MnDOT are not viewing this as something that we want to get involved in, owning and operating these stations. We don't have the expertise or the capacity to service these or to do the installation or negotiate the contract with utilities. Where it does relate to Representative Lippert's proposed bill is that there may be some locations along in rest areas where even with this incentive provided by the federal government, there may still be gaps in the network. And so, what this language would allow us to do is give us a little flexibility only in those cases where we can't find a private sector site host. So whether this is a gas station, a convenience store, a big box store, but you still need that network. Would allow us some flexibility to install these stations at rest areas in those situations.
Thank you. Representative Barr, if you have one final question or a closing comment, this will be your opportunity here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just a comment at the end was, I'm pretty sure that all of our electric providers in the state should be rolled into this conversation. They're the ones that are actually going to have to be laying electric lines for this and demand and whether their capacity can handle all this. So they need to be definitely involved in this conversation as well. And I would really like to see some language around fees included in this. If you're going to put in an electric vehicle charging station, we should not be giving away the electricity. We should be charging for it. And the last comment is, I would like to see this bill already is the prohibition on private commercial entities operating these. Maybe the state could change that as well, or maybe we in this committee could change that as well to allow private entities to install electric vehicle chargers in safety rest areas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barr. And the bill is going to be in our committee, and obviously I know Representative Lippert well, and he'll be interested in engaging with any member that has thoughts or suggestions. Members, what I know we have several more questions or comments. We will get to those, but before we do, I would like to call on Anna Johnson, who has signed up to testify before the committee. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Johnson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Anna Johnson, and I am testifying on behalf of Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that has been working to accelerate Minnesota's transition to a clean energy economy for nearly 30 years. Transportation is the leading source of greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota and the country, and is also a major source of air pollution that harms human health. Electrifying our transportation sector is critical to reaching economy-wide decarbonization by mid-century and will also impact public health by improving air quality. Electric vehicles play a pivotal role in this transition. Fresh Energy supports House File 3220. Representative Lippert's bill will allow for improved access to charging infrastructure for electric vehicles along Minnesota's interstates. This will especially support EV drivers in greater Minnesota, where there's currently a higher need for charging infrastructure. Expanding opportunities for EV charging will help give drivers the confidence they need to adopt and utilize this emerging climate-friendly technology for their next trip within or through Minnesota. Thank you for your time, and Fresh Energy encourages your support. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson, and thank you for your work and your engagement with this issue. So I don't see any, unless there's any specific questions for Ms. Johnson, I see many hands up. If anyone could just, I'm assuming nothing specifically for Ms. Johnson. So here is the lineup, just so you guys can find your place here. I'm kind of going in memory of the order. I believe we have Representative Heinrich, and then we're going to go to Representative Petersburg, Representative Torkelson, Mason, and Nelson. So keep your questions short, keep your answers brief to those testifiers who the questions are directed to. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. I will try to keep it brief. I do have a couple questions, either for, I'm not sure if Mr. Sexton or Mr. Radin's better suited for him, but my first question is there been any thought put into the security for the rest stop locations? I know currently at rest stops, maybe it's State Patrol that kind of patrols those areas. Obviously, you have people, maintenance staff, people coming in and out to see if there's been any vandalism done. I'm wondering what kind of the future looks like. Say there's the EV charging stations at these proposed host sites. What would the security look like? Would the state be looked at, try to have to look after these facilities? And if vandalism did happen, is there a possibility the state would be on the hook for that? Or would that also be under the private sector's purview? I know I did like a gas station or something. Obviously, there's people there all the time. There's cameras. So maybe a little bit different environment for a host site like that than than a rest stop. So that's my first question. I have one more if we can do that, Mr. Chair.
Let's take that one. We've got time, Representative Heinrich. So I don't know if that would be for Assistant Commissioner Sexton or Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to take a shot. I think, you know, that it's correct that on interstate rest areas, especially, it would be state patrol that would primarily be, you know, in charge of any security at those locations. You know, I don't think they typically provide a lot of patrolling at rest areas, although they may, you know, stop in. I think there are even a couple of rest areas that have like a small substation for troopers to use if they have to fill out paperwork or that sort of thing. We do contract with Greenview, which is the organization that provides custodial responsibilities at rest areas. And so, you know, it's fairly common to have a Greenview staff person, especially at the larger rest areas, and you know, certainly during daytime hours, to have somebody who's actually on site and can sort of help keep an eye on things if necessary. But, you know, I think if something did happen, it would probably be the responsibility of the private sector company who would be in charge of maintaining the charging stations themselves.
Okay. Representative Heinrich, well, how about one last one for you?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that response, Mr. Rudin. I just think it's something that we should maybe take a closer look at, because it just seems to me that it's not a traditional spot where, you know, you have the private sector in there and then somebody else is responsible for kind of the security of that situation. So not exactly putting my finger on it right now, but it's something I think we should think about a little bit further. And then my other question is in regards to, you know, there doesn't seem to be enough host sites right now. Is there an ask or is there lobbying from the manufacturers of EVs for kind of these state systems? You know, is the demand high enough where, and there's no private sector like existing gas stations or facilities where, you know, does this make more sense, I guess, to go this route? Are they running out of options kind of in other traditional spots where motorists get their fuel no matter what form it is? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Dean.
Actually, Mr. Chair, if I could refer to Mr. Sexton on this
one. I guessed wrong on that. Mr. Sexton.
Sure. Thank you, Chair and Representative. That's a great question. I think the way that we're viewing this bill language is to provide us with some additional flexibility. Our first approach, working especially with these federal dollars, will be to identify private sector site hosts. And that the flexibility that this would afford us is, you know, to potentially fill in some of those gaps where we can't identify private sector hosts. And it's important to note too that we really haven't had the opportunity, because we didn't have the funding to go along with these asks in the past, to go out and really work with those potential site hosts to identify charging locations. And so that's what we're really, I guess, excited about with this new bill, is that we have, you know, a real incentive for people to consider adding, for private sector site hosts to add these chargers. So we feel like this is going to give us some flexibility. But again, it's important to note that at least we're viewing this as a place to fill in gaps where we cannot find private sector hosts. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for your questions, Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next on the list is Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to ask my question kind of in two parts, so you don't have to come back to me. But
okay.
The first question revolves around what I've heard and what I think I didn't hear. And that is, I heard Mr. Rudin say that the agency worked with the EPA and others to determine the energy policy and how we accomplish our goals. But then Mr. Sexton made some assumptions that said that the stations that we have along interstates and others aren't enough for private industry or private providers of electrical energy to do that. And yet I never heard anybody say that they had gone to the actual energy providers to ask their input and to ask what they had been doing. And so since the infrastructure coming into these stations will have to be provided by the energy companies, my guess is that they would be very willing to talk about it. So I'm hoping that that you're going to be talking to them. And if you have, please let us know that. The other piece is that I will follow up with is just saying that I agree with Representative Barr. I think this bill has a lot of issues that need to still be worked out. The providing of infrastructure for fees, whether or not we get it from federal government approval or not, I think that's still an issue that needs to be dealt with, and how we deal with what companies want to come in all need to be addressed a little bit more specifically than what we have in this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Representative Petersburg. Do we have a MnDOT representative that wants to respond to Representative Petersburg?
Yeah, thank you, Chair and Representative Petersburg. It's a great question, and I think it's also great to hear that I feel like we're largely aligned here. So two parts, and please let me know if I don't fully answer the question, but the first one in regards to working with utilities, part of the planning process that is required in order to access the federal funds for EV charging does require us to develop a plan that's due by August 1st. And part of that and part of the guidance, it does identify a number of stakeholders that we need to reach out to, and that includes utilities. So in advance of that, though, I will also share that we've had a number of informal conversations with utilities around the state to understand what their needs are, because we agree that they're gonna be really important partners here. And partners, I think it's going to vary by utility. Some utilities are installing chargers themselves, and others are supporting the infrastructure. But the other key role that they will play is some of these chargers, especially when we talk about the faster chargers that have more energy needs, they're going to require some utility upgrades. And so we need to work with utilities to understand where we can most cost effectively support chargers to be added, so that we're not adding or suggesting chargers in locations that are very expensive for the utilities. So we agree 100% that they're very important partners, and they will be part of this planning process. And the second piece regarding fees, while it's not explicitly required, working with the private sector with these federal funds, we fully expect that they will be charging fees. And that's why it's really important to work with the private sector, because otherwise they won't be in business if they're not charging fees to cover their expenses. Now, the one final note on this is that the federal dollars do allow for some short-term support for operating and maintenance costs, especially in those locations where the demand for charging might be lower right now. So there is some support that could be provided if we elect to go that route. But the fees and the connection to the private sector is really important, and we fully expect that they will be covering their costs plus profit as part of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any follow-up? Representative Petersburg?
Yeah, if I could just say, so one thing that just to be careful of is trying to make the assumption that government will know which is best located for high-speed infrastructure charging or not, because I will tell you, the industry knows a lot better than we do as government. So you should take their lead rather than trying to lead them in that regard. That's just a follow-up statement. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm done.
Thanks, Representative Petersburg. We have Representative Torkelson followed by Representative Mason. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, there's lots of potential questions here. I'll try to restrict myself. Is there a vision for how electrical vehicle charging is going to look in the future? Are these installations at wayside rests intended to be a permanent fixture or a stopgap until we see them at the local convenience store where while you're waiting for your car to charge, you can get a pizza and a Coke?
MnDOT response.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein.
You know what? I'm going to assume that
that's fair.
Mr. Sexton's going to take the rest of these. Mr. Sexton.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Torkelson. I think that this is really important. Even right now, it's fair to say that we think that the private sector already is the best location for these, so private sector site hosts. And that it's unclear what the long-term outlook is for rest areas or any sort of publicly owned space for EV charging. So I think that the need right now in terms of the short is short-term flexibility to address those gaps. You know, and it's likely that those would be a short-term need, but it's hard to say because this industry is changing so quickly that I think we're looking at this as giving a little bit more flexibility. And again, this bill would allow us to charge a fee where we currently are unable to at safety rest areas. Thank you.
Representative Torkelson?
Well, just a comment, Mr. Chair. You know, I understand why there's a desire to get some infrastructure out there to make electric vehicles feasible in the short term. I think it would be a mistake to invest heavily with high-speed chargers that require lots of infrastructure at these locations, because the private sector isn't going to want them at rest stops, frankly. They're going to want them where they can sell the pizza and the Coke. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Sexton, for your answer.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. We have Representative Mason and then Representative Nelson after that. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the comment, I remember when we were in Israel in 2009, when we were hearing about the infrastructure that they were putting in then. So at least right now, it's encouraging to me to see that we are making some progress here in Minnesota. And maybe you might want to add some additional comments on that. Thank you.
Was that directed at anyone?
No, only if you wanted to add something about what you remember.
Well, I mean, yeah, I've traveled in Europe and the Middle East, and you know, all I can say is that you know, this is a global initiative. I was in Glasgow at the UN climate conference in November, and there was a lot of conversation about electric vehicles and electric charging stations. So I guess all I can say, Representative Mason, is that, you know, this is really an international priority. And I think certainly a national priority is evidenced in the investments that were made in the federal infrastructure and jobs bill. I should be more accurate, Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So, it's been my view that we should do our part here in Minnesota, but you know, members have asked some really good questions today, and I think there is a lot of food for thought in terms of how we do this, not if we do this, but how we do this. So thank you for that observation, Representative Mason. I believe our last member question is from Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And getting back to the question of charging a fee, as I read the bill, and I looked at the statute in the time we've been discussing this here, but the bill in line 1.17, right before the new language being added in the section of law that it's being put in, the section of law says no commercial establishment within the right of way, and then there are exceptions. And there's a list of exceptions, and the one right before this is vending machines may be placed in rest areas. And I had never been at a rest area where they give away candy free. You have to pay to use the vending machine. But I think it's applied that it's, if you're going to be doing allowing commercial business in the rest area, and this is allowing commercial electric vehicle charging stations in the rest area, you're going to be charging a fee. I think it's implied, again, in the section of law that it's in. And again, if you're going to do commercial business, you're going to be charging a fee, and you're going to be charging a profit. Hoping to get a profit, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you for your quick work on doing some legal research for us, Chairman Nelson. Okay, members, I don't see any additional hands. So we can maybe proceed with wrapping up here. Maybe some comments from MnDOT and the author, and then we'll lay the bill over and adjourn. So last word to MnDOT and the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just appreciate the discussion. There have been some really good questions, and you know, this is a kind of a newish activity, at least. And so, you know, when we have new systems like this, there can be some unknowns, clearly. But we look forward to working, you know, with you and others. As we mentioned, we have to do a lot of work between now and August to kind of come up with the plan for locating and installing EV charging stations. So it's an exciting time in the industry, and we're going to see lots of changes, I think, over the next several years with the way we power our transportation system. So thank you for your time today, and we look forward to working with you as the building moves forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rudine. And then I'll just turn for some final thoughts and observations, comments from Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the time, the conversation today. I think this transition is critical for our climate, and putting infrastructure in place is also key. Exactly how it's done is a part of the conversation. I think the exchange contributed to that effort today, but I look forward to working with members, and I appreciate the consideration of the bill today.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. I will echo what Representative Lippert said. This has been a fantastic and thoughtful discussion today, and it'll be one of several we have in committee about various aspects of electrification of transportation infrastructure. We'll touch on it a little bit next week when the Met Council talks about their bus electrification transition plan. We will obviously be talking about it when we get to larger conversation about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So there'll be many opportunities to continue this conversation, but this was a good way to kick it off. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Lippert. And so with that, members, I will lay over House File 3220 for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation bill. So there will be plenty of time to work on this and work through some of the issues that have been raised today. So members, that concludes our bills for today. Just a little preview of Thursday. We are going to be hopefully once and for all resolving the long-standing discussion in this committee about salvage titles. So we'll be discussing House File 3296 from Representative Joachim. Representative Baker will be back with a bill related to towing, and Representative Moeller on also a towing related bill. There was a bill originally on the agenda today from Representative Becker Finn related to speed limits, and that was not included in our agenda today. And that's, we don't have a date for that bill as of yet, but that bill was dropped from the agenda today. We won't be hearing it in the near future, at least the next couple of weeks. With that, members, we are adjourned, and I will see you on Thursday. Have a good rest of the day, safe driving, and keep warm. Be well. Bye-bye.